Today is Wednesday, May 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, as many parts of the world begin to reopen for business, fears remain about a second wave of COVID-19 in the fall. In the U.S., where cases continue to rise, Congress is struggling to agree on whether to provide more aid.
We can't sit here and twiddle our thumbs and say, let's wait.
More aid to businesses and the millions of Americans out of work. Also ahead, Lady Gaga, a former president, and other very big names help students ease the pain of not having a real graduation. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump is making himself Exhibit A for reopening the country with a trip on Tuesday to a factory in Arizona that's now making N95 masks. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
A sign inside the Honeywell plant in Phoenix advised employees and visitors to wear a mask at all times. But President Trump, his top aides, and Honeywell executives did not.
The people of our country are warriors.
At an earlier stop, the president acknowledged returning the country and the economy to normalcy would have a human cost.
Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country open, and we have to get it open soon.
And the president is predicting an economic rebound by the end of the year. I'm Ben Thomas.
U.S. deaths from the novel coronavirus surged past 70,000 Tuesday as a key forecasting model nearly doubled its previous estimates for fatalities. More than 1.2 million people in the U.S. have tested positive for COVID-19, more than the combined total of the next largest outbreaks. Nonetheless, the Trump administration plans to wind down the coronavirus task force as the country moves into a second phase focusing on the aftermath of the outbreak. This as the Republican-controlled Senate is now back in Washington, while members of the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives continue to work remotely. Joining us to talk more about it is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, what are the Senate members that are back in Washington expecting to accomplish?
Well, the Republican majority Senate came back because, of course, they do have a much smaller membership than the 431-person House. You're talking about 100 senators who can much easily more social distance. They can do it in smaller groups, the voting. They can social distance at hearings. And that's what they've been doing, basically, is considering President Trump's nominees that have all been on hold during this pandemic. So there's that. But they're also looking at a new round of that massive aid that needs to go out to address the public health and economic crises caused by the coronavirus. And while those negotiations worked out in the first round, this second round may be a little bit harder. Take a listen to Leader McConnell on Tuesday.
We may act again. And if we do, it'll be because we're taking a measured response first to what we've already done, and then we'll see whether we need to do a lot more.
How was that approach received by Senate Democrats?
In short, not very well, because as we know, they were trying to get that aid that they say is crucial to help state and local governments in the last round of coronavirus aid, and they didn't get it. Expecting that they would be able to come back to the negotiating table and get it again this time around. But of course, now with Leader McConnell pulling back, that appears not to be happening.
Senate Democrat Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
People are losing their jobs every day. Small businesses are going bankrupt every day. People are getting corona every day, and people are dying every day. We can't sit here and twiddle our thumbs and say, let's wait. There are huge needs.
But realistically, Catherine, how could anything really realistically get done when the House of Representatives is still not in the building?
Well, the Democratic majority U.S. House, the leadership in that House would argue that even though they're not in Washington, D.C., all of the members are working remotely in their districts, like many Americans who have had to work remotely in their own homes for the past few weeks. So they are building together the ideas for this new round of aid. They're talking on the phone. They're holding press conferences constantly, teletown halls, that type of thing. They're marshaling their ideas, and we're expecting to see something at the end of this week that will put forward the Democratic proposal and kind of give Senate Republicans a starting point in in the negotiations. We might even see something as soon as next week where everybody could be called back for a vote on that aid.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. The World Health Organization, Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and World Economic Forum have issued guidelines to African countries looking to open up their economies after weeks of lockdown due to the coronavirus. Health authorities are concerned that opening up too quickly could entail a fresh wave of COVID-19 cases on the continent. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
With the coronavirus having thrown many African economies into a deep freeze, many governments are facing pressure to end lockdowns and travel restrictions so people can get back to work. But health experts say any country planning to reopen for business needs to do so gradually and based on science-based reasoning. In a new report, the WHO, Africa CDC, World Economic Forum, and Vital Strategies, an organization that helps governments strengthen their public health systems, say governments should first open up vital sectors of their economies and only when the data show it is safe to do so. They say the key figures to watch are the number of coronavirus cases, the extent of testing, and whether any outbreaks are accelerating. Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said in a video conference that authorities have to balance economic concerns with consideration of public health.
The economic impact of the pandemic is going to be great anyway, and the measures are merely sharpening and making that worse on the most vulnerable populations. So there needs to be a combination of gradually releasing, analyzing the most critical economic activities that are to continue, including in some countries, agriculture. We've been very concerned about the lockdowns and their impact on agriculture for the future, not only for now.
Many Africans remain anxious about the near future. People in 20 African countries were surveyed for the report. John Nkangasong, director of the Africa CDC, said the report showed that 44% of respondents said they felt they were at high personal risk to COVID-19, while nearly 70% of people acknowledged that food and water would be a problem if they were required to remain at home for 2 weeks. He had this advice for Nigeria as it looks to open up again.
They should continue to expand and strengthen their public health systems, especially the testing capacity, and not just in the major cities of Lagos and Abuja, but all through the entire country. That way they will be able to pick up cases as they emerge, isolate them, and trace their contacts. That's the only way you can be sure to continue to function while maintaining a good handle, a public health handle on the situation in the country.
Nkangasong said the report made three key recommendations to governments across Africa. First, while caseloads are low, build up public health systems to test, trace, isolate and treat cases. Second, monitor data on how public health and social distancing measures affect the spread of the virus. And last, convince communities to adapt health measures so that people's livelihoods can be protected. Simon Marks of VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The United Kingdom has overtaken Italy to report the highest official death toll from the new coronavirus in Europe, as there is increasing pressure on Prime Minister Boris Johnson over his response to the crisis. But in other parts of Europe, including hard-hit countries like Spain and Italy, officials have begun relaxing restrictions. International Edition's Steve Miller spoke with Paris-based journalist Nicolas Pinault via WhatsApp to get an idea of how people are reacting to the easing of restrictions and what concerns they may have.
Well, the only word that people had in their mouth was freedom. I mean, you could talk about, you know, elders in Spain or people, construction workers in Italy. Everybody was quite a relief being able to go outside without some restrictions. But we have to mention that you have some differences between Spain and Italy. For example, in Spain, the lockdown, the end of the lockdown, you have different phases. Right now, they're in phase one. And for example, people above the age of 70, they were allowed to go out for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening, for example. And above that, people between these two schedules, you have people above 14 years old. They're and adults. They can, you know, go outside pretty normally. We have to mention that in Spain, Wearing a face mask is compulsory in public transportation. That's something very important. And still, people, they cannot meet outside of their house, which is something, obviously, with this Mediterranean culture, something very important. And also some shops, bars, and churches, which is very important in this Catholic country, are starting reopening since Monday. Although in Italy, you mentioned construction business. That's something important, especially for the small businesses. But bars and, for example, ice cream parlors remain shut down over there. So it's pretty something like a relief in this southern part of Europe.
Speaking geographically, France is more or less in the middle between these two countries. What's been the reaction there since there are still several stay-at-home orders in place?
Yeah, the end of the lockdown is going to start on Monday 11th. But as of right now, the government has extended the state of health emergency. And the simple reason, and President Macron stated that, is that right now the epidemic is not over. Of course, the numbers are better, especially people who need intensive care. That's something that's much, much better. But so far, France has 25,000 casualties in this battle against the virus. And the government wants to make sure that if the lockdown occurs on May 11th, it's not going to be too quick. So then you're not going to have this second wave of cases like you had maybe in other countries. So as of Monday, people, they're going to be able to go back to work. But really, the government urged people to telework in order to avoid, transportation being crowded. And as of schools, mayors and local authorities, they're going to have the discretion to be able to decide if they have the means to open schools in a safe environment for kids.
Are they concerned that things could reemerge and have a second wave?
Yeah, and the main concern is with kids, because so far we know that kids, they might be able, to get the disease and get the virus, but mainly to spread it with adults. And that's the main concern. That's why even like for France, even if schools may reopen next week, you have many parents saying, it's not safe for me to put my kids back to school. And that's why in some countries, schools will not reopen until September.
Meanwhile, Europe's tourism sector has lost out on weeks of revenue because of the coronavirus lockdown. Now that countries are planning to gradually reopen, potential tourists are facing different rules and safety guidelines across the continent. Martha van der Wolf reports from Amsterdam.
Jan Nak is newly retired and was planning to camp around Portugal for the month of May with his wife. But due to the coronavirus, the Dutch couple opted to rent a summer house in the Netherlands instead.
As we didn't get ill up till now, and my wife is still working, we said, okay, we don't take any risk and we stay in the Netherlands. And if you go, if you travel, you are a danger for another one as well. So we didn't want to endanger other people and protect ourselves. We said, okay, if we can't go this year, we go next year.
Southern and Mediterranean European countries attract millions of tourists like Nuck and his wife each year. One of the most popular camping destinations is France. But that country closed all its camping sites on March 17. And the sites are losing out on the profitable spring season when they usually make about a third of their yearly revenue. Jay Custers is the vice president of the French Campsite Union and manages a campsite in the popular Dordogne area in southwestern France. This region, with castles, caves and historical sites, attracts more than 3 million tourists each year. Normally, Custers would now be welcoming some of the estimated 10,000 people who visit the site each year. But these days, he is working on a detailed plan on how to safely reopen the grounds.
The size of a campsite is in acres, not in square meters. So there's no problem having a distance between the people. For the toilet blocks, is more about hygiene and special rules, but that's not too problematic. I think that in terms of animation, that will change also a lot. The big events with concerts and so, that's probably finished. So you have to adapt ourselves to a new way of entertaining people.
Although Britons, German, and Dutch make up about 40% of visitors to France, the others are French nationals. Because of the coronavirus, many people prefer a vacation closer to home to feel safer, but also because each country has its own rules. France and Italy are planning to slowly reopen, but won't allow regional border crossings for now. Germany warns people against foreign travel, although Austria hopes to attract German tourists. Greece, a country that depends on tourism for 20% of its GDP, is considering only allowing in tourists who can prove they are not suffering from COVID-19 and have a so-called health passport. The different guidelines will make it difficult not only for intra-European travel, but also for travelers from outside the continent. A partial lifting of the lockdown will not work, says Tom Jenkins, CEO of the European Tourism Association.
That they're going to be lifted piecemeal and in a different way is of concern. The whole industry, as it stands as of March 2020, is geared towards looking after people in real volume of numbers. And if the precondition of any movement is that volume is heavily restricted, then the businesses won't function.
The EU Commission is considering boosting the tourism industry by investing money from the EU budget. The sector accounts for 10% of the bloc's GDP, and more than 27 million people work in tourism-related jobs. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Amsterdam.
A new report says the number of children internally displaced because of conflict and violence has hit an all-time high. The UN Children's Fund says an estimated 19 million children have been forced to flee their homes and are living without proper care and protection. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UNICEF says Syria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Yemen account for more than one-third of all children displaced within their own countries because of violence and conflict. Other countries that harbor more than 1 million children within their borders include Colombia, Afghanistan, Somalia, Nigeria, and Sudan. A spokeswoman for the UN Children's Fund, Marixi Mercado, tells VOA urgent action is needed to protect those millions of displaced people from the multiple risks they face. She says they lack access to basic services, including education and health care.
They're being uprooted and taken out of their familiar surroundings, exposes them to all sorts of risk. This includes more violence, this includes exploitation, abuse, and even trafficking. Many children are also at risk of being put to work or being married off early and being separated from their families.
Added to the threats is COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Mercado says the pandemic is making a critical situation worse for the unusually high number of displaced children and their families.
They live in overcrowded camps or informal settlements where sanitary conditions are far from ideal and where physical distancing is simply not possible. COVID-19 is disrupting immunization campaigns across the world. This puts these children at even higher risk of diseases that are vaccine preventable.
Mercado says she fears that could have disastrous consequences for children. UNICEF is appealing to governments, civil society, and the private sector to unite and invest in concrete action that can help protect and provide equitable access to essential services for all internally displaced children and their families. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here are some of the other stories we're following at VOA. The World Health Organization said Tuesday that a new report found that COVID-19 had emerged in December in France, sooner than previously thought, and was not surprising, and urged countries to investigate any other early suspicious cases. The disease was first reported by Chinese authorities to the World Health Organization on December 31st and was not previously believed to have spread to Europe until January. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said Tuesday that the Taliban is not living up to their commitments under an agreement signed this year amid signs the fragile deal is under strain by a political deadlock and increasing Taliban violence. After lengthy talks behind closed doors, the Taliban and Washington signed an agreement in February for reduced violence and a move toward talks with the Afghan government, but attacks by the group have increased since then. And the Vatican Tuesday published a booklet of pastoral guidelines to care for displaced migrants forced to flee their homes due to conflict, natural disasters, or persecution, but don't cross international borders to seek asylum elsewhere. The booklet says internal migrants should have the same legal protections as refugees and says their children should have the right to birth certificates, education, and being reunited with their parents if they're separated. More than 40 million people are believed to be displaced within their own countries. Stay with VOA for all the latest U.S. and world news. A senior government scientist has filed a whistleblower complaint and wants his old job back and a full investigation of how the Trump administration pushed a specific drug to fight the coronavirus. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
The Health and Human Services scientist reassigned after questioning President Trump's push for a malaria drug to treat coronavirus patients has filed a whistleblower complaint. Rick Bright, who headed the department's Advanced Research and Development Authority, claims he was reassigned after he resisted pressure to allow the widespread use of hydroxychloroquine on COVID-19 patients, despite questions about its effectiveness and severe side effects. An HHS spokeswoman says Bright requested the emergency authorization for the drug. He says that authorization was to be restricted to that of a doctor treating a limited group of hospitalized patients. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Greece has lodged a stiff demarc with Turkey, claiming Turkish officials ordered fighter jets to buzz a military helicopter carrying Greece's defense minister over the Aegean Sea. Turkey denies the accusation, saying Greece, in the words of Turkish officials, is over-dramatizing what Ankara says are routine flights in the region. The government in Athens is concerned that a fresh standoff in the Aegean could scare travelers who are starting to make vacation plans to the Greek islands once the coronavirus emergency ends. Anthi Karasaba reports from Athens.
Greek government spokesman Stelios Petsa said Greece was ready to resist any Turkish provocation. He said harassment of the Greek defense minister's plane by a group of Turkish warplanes over the Aegean Sea was indicative of what he called Turkey's practice of breaching good neighbor relations and international rules. Greece and Turkey have had a long history of testy relations, each challenging the other's claims to air, sea, and land rights in the Aegean Sea that divides them. The two NATO allies have come to the brink of war three times in the last 30 years. Athens most recently accused Ankara of orchestrating an invasion, a term Greek officials used to describe Turkey's decision to allow and encourage tens of thousands of migrants who had been trapped in Turkey to push their way into Greece and the heart of Europe. Officials tell VOA Turkish warplanes came within 400 meters of the defense minister's military helicopter as he was traveling to inspect observation points on remote islands in the Aegean. Officials say the jets were quickly intercepted by Greek warplanes. But then the officials said another sortie of Turkish firefighters continued to do dangerous maneuvers over the Aegean. Since then, 20 more aerial confrontations have followed despite Greece's protests to Turkey. Officials in Ankara deny there has been any harassment. They say Turkish warplanes were merely conducting routine flights and accused Athens of exaggerating. It is not the first time Greek and Turkish warplanes have faced off over the Aegean. But tensions between the two countries have soared dramatically since Turkey's bid to push more than 150,000 migrants into Greece. And now officials here fear a new standoff, either in the sea, land, or air, that separates the two age-old rivals. In the last few days, authorities have captured video of the Turkish Coast Guard pushing migrant vessels to Greece, increasing refugee flows to a country already inundated with more than 100,000 asylum seekers. Defense Minister Nikos Panagiotopoulos explains.
Είναι γεγονός. Δεν είχαμε καμία ψευδέστηση ούτε στο Υπουργείο Άμυνας, ούτε στο Υπουργείο Εξωτερικών, ούτε στο Υπουργείο...
He says it would be a false illusion or expectation for Greece to anticipate anything less from Turkey, especially after it has already made clear that it will reopen its borders and allow migrants free access to Europe once it manages to contain the outbreak of the coronavirus in its country. How long that will take remains unclear. Greece has successfully managed its health crisis and is now easing restrictions nationwide. There is concern that any fresh standoff in the Aegean may spook travelers from making plans to visit Greece and its sun-kissed islands this summer. Tourism is Greece's biggest industry, and the government here hopes to open up the country for business by July. Antti Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Oh. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Former U.S. President Barack Obama, Lady Gaga, LeBron James, and K-pop band BTS are among dozens of celebrities and world leaders who will salute the class of 2020 in virtual U.S. graduation ceremonies, replacing the traditional end of high school and college. Obama and his wife, Michelle, will headline two separate graduation events in a one-hour multimedia event called Graduate Together to be broadcast May 16th across multiple networks. Obama will deliver a message to high school seniors and reflect on the coronavirus pandemic. A separate YouTube event called Dear Class of 2020 will be hosted by Michelle Obama's Reach Higher initiative and streamed on June 6th. The former president will join with the likes of Pakistani Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai and former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice in celebrating graduates across the United States. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and be well.